private property in its market context through the comprehensive central plan. The Frankfurt critique of liberal capitalism could confront ideal with reality, within the reality under analysis, and individuality as self-development with individuality as self-preservation. That is, individualism as a step in human development, with individualism as an ideological veil masking the new atomization and functionalization of concrete individuals. The basis of the older critique was therefore a two-dimensional reality, open to what Horkheimer and Adorno called immanent criticism. Page 11. But as the critical theorists from the end of reason to Marcuse's one-dimensional man, 1963, were to claim, the reality was replaced liberal capitalism, the new society whose aspects were uncritically projected by the developmental theory usually deduced from the Marxism critique of political economy was one-dimensional. The new critical theory discovered itself in a historical context where the domination of men over men and a new Frankfurt theme over nature was justified or veiled by no traditional or even old bourgeoisie ideals, but only by technical efficiency. Footnote 18. Text. If the other side of the commodity or money fetish was the birth of the individual, the other side of the ladder's decline was the technological veil. The total central plan, which represented a new stage of freedom in orthodox Marxism and even in critical theory of the 1930s, was now presented by Horkheimer as the tool of authoritarian politics, as the new fetish. Man's control over nature, another classical Marxian desideratum originally uncontested by critical theory, was, according to the Horkheimer of 1940, necessarily the stuff of the new ideology. Here we have the beginnings of the critique of instrumental reason, which Adorno and Horkheimer eventually unfolded as the speculative philosophy of history. One must realize, however, that the original context of the new critique, the new critical theory, in other words, the second phase of the critical Marxist project, was not initially a philosophy of history, nor even a merely social philosophical juxtaposition of liberalism and the authoritarian state. Rather, the first version of the critique of instrumental reason implied an immanent critique of politics that attempted the critical analysis of the new fetish of technological rationality, hoping to discover the dynamics of the society that was fetishistically disguised. The bulk of the essays reproduced in this chapter represent the kind of political sociology that the new departure of critical theory presupposed. Otto Kirchheimer's essay, for example, contrasts favorably the liberal, ideal form of parliamentary compromise based on individual voices themselves, kept in check by the institutions of public opinion, with mass democratic political compromise based on pluralistic pressure groups in which the member individual tends to lose the right of legal and political recourse. Here was at least some of the political content of the speculative thesis of the new and of the individual. According to Kirchheimer, in a link typical of Frankfurt theory, pluralist compromise foreshadowed fascist compromise based on strictly enforced deals among groups wholly authoritarian toward their involuntary membership. Footnote 19, text. Page 12. If Kirchheimer defended liberal compromise against both forms of pluralism, democratic and fascist, Franz Neumann was to do the same in the area of public law. In this context, the two theorists were very close together. Neumann, footnote 20, text, in particular, was not afraid to revising the position of both Marx and Weber and the rule of formal laws that characterized the liberal epoch. Indeed, formal, rationalized general laws have the function of obscuring the domination by the bourgeoisie, Marx, and of rendering the economic system calculable, Weber. However, they are also guarantee a minimum of individual freedom and equality. All substitution of particularized substantive law of the general and formal meant to Neumann the conversion of judges into policemen. The crucial step in this process of the destruction of justice occurred under fascism once again, but Neumann did not exclude either the Soviet Union or some of the imminent tendency of monopoly capitalism from producing similar results. If the major theorists of the Frankfurt School, Horkheimer, Marcuse, and Adorno, were rarely so laudatory as Neumann and Kirchheimer about the achievements of liberalism in the sphere of politics and law, in the context of art especially, but also philosophy, they produced, as we will see in Part Roman II, perfectly analogous arguments. They judged the movement from autonomous through undemocratic, art for art's sake, the cultivation of high culture as an end in itself, to a mass culture produced and manipulated by cultural industries in exactly the same terms as Kirchheimer did the changing structure of political compromise. As the surrender of the last aspects of individual autonomy, as the preparation of key elements of the fascist system. Footnote 21, text. This last point is illustrated in Adorno's Freudian theory and the pattern of fascist propaganda, and this essay, along with Horkheimer's Authoritarian State, both reproduced below, give clear indications of that cultural catastrophe, which was the experiential context of most of what we know as Frankfurt critical theory. It is fair to say that the theory was born in an attempt to theoretically account for the authoritarian states, both in relationship to the liberalism they replaced and in relationship to one another in the context of the experience of fascism. The authoritarian state, old or new order? In the mid-1930s, the term authoritarian state already appeared in the Frankfurt vocabulary, but exclusively in relationship to German fascism. At the same time, the capitalism of the day were understood as monopoly capitalism, still dominated by the law of value, even so certain structural changes, shift from ownership to managerial control were noted. Page 13. The German authoritarian state was seen as perhaps the most plausible political form of monopoly capitalism. Footnote 22. Text. Franz Neumann held the position as late as 1942 in his book Behemoth, denying in a debate with Pollock the possibility of a new social formation in which the state replaces collective capital, that is, state-planned capitalism or state capitalism, of which National Socialist Germany represented only one variant. But by this time, Neumann, arguing on the basis of an orthodox Marxist economic theory, did not represent the main tendency of critical theory. It is true that in 1939, in Die Juden und Europa, Horkheimer himself for a moment approached the orthodoxy of the Dimitrov thesis identified with the Communist International of the Popular Front period. Market capitalism had collapsed. State reform of the old social economic structure is an illusion. Fascism is logically the last stage of capitalist development. The old fetishes of exchange and anonymity of domination are here replaced by direct political means and open terroristic domination. But as Horkheimer well knew, no society can be integrated only by open force alone, and by the end of reason, 1940, the last stress was partially replaced by one on the technological veil, technocratic fetish. Here Horkheimer followed Marx's example rather than Marxist dogma, with the technological veil being the analogy of the commodity fetish. And in the somewhat later authoritarian state, Horkheimer now including a critique of the Soviet Union for the first time in his analysis, speaks of three different variants of the authoritarian state, of which German fascism was not even the most streamlined and rationalized. The break, which the official Marxism of the time could not have been more complete. Between 1940 and 1941, several Frankfurt theorists investigated the characteristics of the new social formation, which some of them called state capitalism, with nearly all of them publishing at least one work of German fascism in particular. Footnote 23, text. The basic questions were these. 1. Can the old liberal capitalism survive or be restored? 2. Is there a possibility of a new state-regulated antagonistic social formation replacing capitalism but in some respects continuous with it? 3. If so, what are the conditions of possibility of transition and can they be countered? 4. What are the structure and the dynamics of this new social formation? Does it obey some of the laws of the old? If not, does it have its own imminent crisis tendencies, economic or otherwise? For the first question, the answer was a unanimous, also sometimes slightly qualified no.